back together, you and I, on Thursday, March 17th, 2022, on Connecticut Today. We welcome to Stamford Greenwich GOP State Rep. Kim Fiorillo back to respond to criticism of a recent statement she made surrounding local housing. University of New Haven Professor of National Security Dr. Howard Stouffer, who's also a State Department veteran, returned to the show to talk about the latest with the Russia-Ukraine situation. Welcoming back amid a little tussle, a little kerfuffle of something she said the other day that seems to have upset some people, but I want to bring her on to defend herself as Republican State Rep. Kim Fiorillo joins us. Hey, Kim, it's Paul again, and how are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much.
Kim, it looks like that you're kind of in the crosshairs here of a lot of people around the state, including the Hearst, Connecticut media folks. The lead editorial today, don't avoid real issues on housing debate. And this, of course, and I was talking about this yesterday before we talked today. This goes back to, I think, Kim, something you said a few days ago during a hearing about, again, another push by folks in Hartford to bigfoot some zoning regulations, which when they say, you know, near commuter rail, I think it's squarely aimed at Fairfield County and Metro North. But talk about the situation here. What did you say exactly, and why do you think it hit such a nerve?
Well, it's interesting because the hearing lasted for 13-14 hours, and that moment was, so brief. But I think it really hit a nerve because it gets to the core principle of what we are debating. And I brought it up because it is a fundamental principle, and it's behind the push for all of these, for so many laws, is really to get to the core of the battle of the idea. And is housing a right? And I think it's because they believe that housing is a natural right that they want to give builders this incredible privilege to build wherever they want, have as-of-right building privileges next to train stations. 500 acres is what half-a-mile radius means. And yes, you're right. It does mean some of our coastal towns. So this is not only historic parts of your town, but environmentally sensitive parts. And, because they believe housing is a right, they want to give builders great powers to build willy-nilly so that they have access to housing. And it's total disregard for any market forces. And one of the things I brought up is, you know, people look for jobs first before they look for housing. And I just felt at some point in this long testimony hearing day, we just had to get to the core, which is, we have a fundamental disagreement on this idea that housing is a natural right.
Kim, hang on. I want to be right back and pick up with this, including the fact that, I guess, and Kim will be right back with you. You know, one of these bills, if I'm reading it correctly, one of these House bills divorces the ability of the public to hold a hearing or assemblies on this stuff. State Rep. Kim Fiorillo is the guest. We'll be back with Kim momentarily. First, on the button on the sixes, traffic and weather together right here on WICC. And if you're in Seymour, any of a number of towns, including those in New Haven, Fairfield County, especially those along the coastline that have any sort of a rail system, commuter rail running through it, you should be concerned about a House bill that is being debated again. It failed the first time in a different form, but it's popped up again, that basically would allow the state to bigfoot zoning regulations and to allow certain types of development within a half mile of bus stations, transport hubs, and rail lines. And Greenwich Stamford GOP State Rep. Kim Fiorillo is with us for a few more minutes. I want to correct that it's Greenwich and Stamford, not Fairfield, Kim's district. Kim, in going through this bill, as much as I can understand, correct me if I'm wrong here, Kim, but does this bill, or one of the bills being considered here that you had the hearing on the other day, does that eliminate the capacity or the ability of cities and towns to hold public votes on this or public hearings on that? Did I read that correctly?
Yes. You did, because that's what as of right building privileges means. And, you know, I really appreciate, Paul, that you have given me some time to talk about this bill, because the people of Connecticut should be indignant at the legislature that brings this bill forth again. And we can't be ignorant to what's happening here. I mean, this is This is basically woke capitalism. This bill allows within half a mile radius of your train station, that's 500 acres, for developers to come in without public hearings, as long as they are within certain parameters, and the parameters are broad when it's as of right building, to build minimum of 15 units per acre. This is forced high density. And this is coming from a group called Desegregate Connecticut. And they have three parts of their agenda. One of them is to disallow single family zoning. They don't like, 1 acre single family zoning. They want to make sure that that goes away in our state. Their second one is this transit oriented development, which sounds great. And it happens naturally. It's normal for places to develop around where there's transportation. But this is like forced high density, and it's a gift to developers. The reason why developers can't build in these areas is because you do have zoning commissions with environmental concerns, traffic concerns, historic districts. There are things that are hindrances, but they're hindrances for good reasons that the people of those towns have brought up. And they include safety and environment. And, this group will claim that it all has to do with racism. And then their third platform is to regionalize local zoning commissions. Why? Because then, builders can come in from out of state and they don't have to go to 169 different tiny little zoning commissions. They can go to just one for an entire region. But that's what we're up against. And they claim to have, this grassroots support, but it's really coming from like high academia and paid lobbyists. And Desegregate is backed by RPA, Regional Plan Association. They come out of New York City, and it is a do-gooding group, and I'm sure they do a lot of good. But in the case of Connecticut, they're coming in with a agenda to supposedly create affordable housing or diverse housing. But be clear, this transit-oriented bill has nothing to do with affordable housing. In fact, it undercuts the current existing 830G state, which is wreaking enough havoc in our state for the towns that don't have 10% affordable housing in the total stock. This current transit-oriented bill says you could do 10% affordable housing, and you can have these as-of-right privileges. So
yeah, Kim, that's something. Excuse me, but that's another thing I picked up yesterday. And again, I'm no attorney. I'm no legal expert here. I'm not a real estate expert, but I think I can read. And I read. I go. Well, I said, but wait a minute. 10% affordable housing. So, Kim, does that mean the other 90% can just be whatever it costs to live in Greenwich or Stamford or Fairfield or Westport or Wilton? I mean, 10% doesn't sound like they're really worried about people who are on lower incomes. Am I wrong here or what?
No, you're absolutely right. And it just takes common sense to connect the dots and realize that this bill is not what it purports to be. And it's not a good bill for Connecticut. And yes, it's 10% and the 90 are market rate. And when you take into consideration the high cost of construction in Connecticut and the high cost of the land that they're targeting in these areas, and that's what I mean when I say, do you think housing is a right? Because you're claiming a right to other people's labor. There's the cost of the land, the lumber, the workmanship, the roofing, the lighting, the electricals, the plumbing, all of that is what goes into housing. And housing is about, a voluntary exchanges in the market between tradesmen and buyers and sellers. And there's an economic reality that is completely missing from so many of the bills that I see in Connecticut. And also, we work in these silos, like you're in the housing committee, you're in insurance committee, and that's like the singular thing you think about. But as legislators, you have to see the bigger picture. There are too many special interest bills that are getting passed, and who's thinking of the regular citizen and the taxpayers and the regular folks of our state? And so, I don't think it was such a bizarre question to ask. Like, where is this starting? Where's the premise? And the premise is wrong.
Yeah. And Kim, finally, it is an election year. You and I both know that. The General Assembly, folks like you in the House and Senate, and the governor and the constitutional officers, Is this just being introduced to keep a segment of the majority party in Hartford happy? Or do you envision this kind of bill, which is very emotional and, you know, may turn some votes come November? Do you envision this actually coming to a vote or not?
I have to tell you, I think these kinds of bills, as offensive as they are a gift, because if you can see it clearly, then I hope more and more citizens can see the contrast of what the majority party is delivering. And, you know, they complain about the rich getting richer, but it's their policies. This bill is a gift to developers, and it's not going to be your local, you know, neighborhood developer. It's the corporate developers coming out of New York City. So to me, I say bring it. Bring the clarity and the contrast. Each of these bills, whether it's, you know, defunding the police, or right now we have a, you know, an interrogations bill, as if legislators need to tell police officers how to do their work. And it's just bill after bill. And I just urge your listeners that it takes just a moment of clarity. And once you see what they're doing to Connecticut, you can't unsee it. And I hope the ballot box will prove it. You can go and make a difference at the ballot box. And please vote Republican. But I have to say, so many of these issues are nonpartisan. I have Democrats and unaffiliated who are grateful for how plain spoken I can be on some of these issues. I hope to have a resounding affirmation for freedom in our state, for people who love freedom, who want to make choices for themselves, who don't see government as the provider of solutions. And that's what I want people in Connecticut to choose. And these kinds of bills make it very easy for folks like me to say, there's a contrast here. Don't vote for government and more of these forced legislations. Vote for freedom.
All right. State Rep. Kim Fiorillo, District 149, Greenwich and Stamford. Kim, be good. Keep us updated on this. You have the number and call whenever you can. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Paul.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye. State Rep. Kim Fiorillo there saying that this bill, this House bill that would basically give carte blanche in so many ways to big-pocketed developers to build multi-unit housing developments within a half mile of a train, commuter rail service line, without going through the usual town or city processes there. I mean, that's just a little, you know, that is the classic term big footing, when a state, an overreaching state government comes in and points to a city or town and says, you know what, you're racist. We're going to do this differently. The ever-changing, the ongoing situation, Russian forces in Ukraine. We welcome back Dr. Howard Stouffer. He is a professor of national security from the Henry C. Lee College of Criminal Justice up on the Hill there in West Haven at the University of New Haven. Also a 25-year veteran of the State Department who served in the Middle East in the 1980s. Dr. Stouffer, Paul here again. How are you?
Hi, thank you for having me on.
Well, it's great to have you on. Great to have you back. Thanks for taking the time. So last time we talked, Dr. Stouffer, I think it was about 3 or 4 weeks ago, right before the invasion, you laid out some compelling stuff that could happen. What are your thoughts since then, and where do you think we're going on this? I see that we're getting reports now that the conscripts aren't getting it done. There could be more troops coming in from other areas. How do you think we progressed on this?
I think the Russians are getting pretty desperate. I don't think we should believe, however, that they can't eventually take over, you know, some of the cities of Ukraine, because they have such massive numbers of personnel, and they have control of the skies, and they're bringing in additional weapon systems. But I do believe that the sanctions are starting to really hurt badly inside Russia, and large numbers of young people and talented, professional people are starting to leave Russia and speak against the regime. Many cultural figures are doing that. But the real answer is going to be that this military police state will continue as long as Putin is able to keep everybody at bay, and everybody, and the only people that really see him are about six different people. And I know that probably standard procedure is for intelligence agencies to try to turn one of them, just as Stalin lost one of his generals in 1938 to the Japanese, it is possible that maybe we can turn one of the senior military leaders to tell the West exactly what's going on over there and what are the weaknesses in Putin's posture, so maybe something can happen and have him removed.
How does that happen, Dr. Stouffer? If you say it's a limited amount of people that are the only ones that can get near him, how do you turn somebody like that?
Well, I think they got to be worried. They see that there were two senior Federal Security Bureau, former KGB leaders, who were imprisoned by Putin in the last couple of weeks because their predictions about taking over Ukraine were wrong. It was going to be a rapid, easy march in like Crimea in 2014, and it turns out to be this slog that's taking thousands of Russian soldier lives. It's using up tons of equipment, and it's causing, worldwide, isolation and establishment of Putin and his regime as a pariah regime. So one of them might just change his mind and turn to the West and tell the West what they need to know to be able to undermine Putin. I'm not saying that he should be killed or anything. I'm just saying, all the leaders who have led Russia into false wars, particularly, in the case of the Tsars right before World War One, mm-hmm. then they sued for peace, and then the Tsars were removed in a Russian revolution. Brezhnev came to power after Nikita Khrushchev had his failure in Cuba. So it's very likely historically the pattern that Putin might find that he'll be removed from power and arrested, put in jail, confined to his dacha, whatever it might take, and they can get somebody in there who's going to try to turn things around and say to the rest of the world, okay, we learned a lesson here, and let's try to fix this.
Dr. Howard Stouffer is the guest from the University of New Haven. So, Dr. Stouffer, what do you make of these continued efforts? And the U.S. has really stepped up here. President Biden signing another requisition yesterday. Is it at all possible for Ukraine to hold off the Russians for an extended period of time with the influx of U.S. and other aid and military aid and equipment and all this coming in through Poland and getting to the main theater? How long can that hold out, help Ukraine hold out?
Well, I think not only the United States, but the U.K. and France and other countries in NATO, including some non-NATO members like the Swedes, the Finns, and NATO member Norway are all sending in as much material as the Ukrainian military can absorb. And I think they can keep that up indefinitely, because the Russians are never going to have enough air power to stop it coming in from Poland. It may be coming, we don't know for sure, it may be coming in from Romania, maybe coming in from Slovakia. The Czech Republic Prime Minister, together with the Slovakian Prime Minister and the Polish Prime Minister, all met with Zelensky personally in Kiev a day and a half ago. So I think the material can keep coming in. We're giving them all kinds of intelligence information on a real-time basis. Half an hour after we scrubbed it for methods and sources, we're giving that information to them. And it may just turn out that they will be able to hold on for a very long time. And, I don't see that we would be running out of material to send to them. And frankly, the things we know about publicly, it's not just that. There are things that we don't know about publicly that are being sent in and given to the Ukrainians. So there may be all kinds of weapon systems that are going in that they're not announcing publicly at all.
Dr. Stouffer, can you crystallize and explain for my audience the theory of a no-fly zone? You have some people in Congress on both sides of the aisle, by the way, saying, yes, we have to do this. You have others saying that would be crazy. Others are saying that's an act of war. Talk about that if you can.
Okay, sure. We had a no-fly zone over Iraq when Saddam Hussein was in power. We also had one over Kosovo during Clinton's time. George H.W. Bush established the one over Iraq, and we had one over Libya as well. No-fly zones require that you send in massive numbers of aircraft to take out all of the air defense systems on the ground, because you don't want to have a no-fly zone and get your plane shut down. Second of all, all of your air sorties have to be flown with at least two planes. So if one of them runs out of fuel, one of them has an accident, one of them has an issue and they crash land, the other one will be able to report it immediately and get that pilot or pilots saved. So we're talking about tens of thousands of flights that have to be maintained all, 24 hours a day, every single day of the year. And so for all intents and purposes, it expands the war because it basically kills lots of Russians on the ground, and then it's followed by killing lots of Russians in the air. And who knows how Putin might react to that? It could very well, he can very well say, you've now joined the war. NATO has joined the war, and I could feel free to attack the Baltic states, Poland, or anywhere else where these pilots would be taking off from, most likely from someplace in Germany or places in Germany.
Dr. Howard Stouffer is the guest. Dr. Stouffer, I'm sure you're reading some of the stuff I am over the last week or so. The fear now, and it's been there from the beginning, but now it's getting a little more louder about a short field, a tactical nuclear weapon. Possibility or not, or we just don't know?
Well, I do know that from the days that I worked on nuclear weapons and negotiations with the Soviets, the Russians do have what they call a permissive link system. In other words, they can't release the use of any nuclear weapon without permission from, in this case, Putin. And then it takes two officers who have keys to be able to unlock the weapon and arm it and then allow it to be used. We've seen no evidence that any of the tactical nukes that they brought to Western Russia have been loaded onto artillery or onto missiles or onto anything that would indicate that they're very, very close to being used. We would know pretty early on if that was the case. And, of course, if tactical nuclear weapons were used, then the entire picture, everything going on there would change dramatically because nuclear weapons haven't been used since Nagasaki and Hiroshima in 1945. And to use nuclear weapons now would just mean that the world has become infinitely, and I say infinitely, more dangerous because no one has used any kind of nuclear weapons since that time. And that would just encourage states to get nuclear weapons. It would encourage states to use nuclear weapons. We would live in a very dangerous time. And Putin would have to expect that the use of a nuclear weapon in Ukraine would lead to a response from either the British, the French, the United States, or all of us. Responding back to that use, and then that means we're in a much higher, elevated state of war. So I don't think he knows he can't use the weapons. He can only threaten and rattle a saber.
Sure.
But for him to use them is a fundamentally different thing.
Finally, Dr. Stouffer, the other elephant in the room seems to be cyber attack, something that the Russians are apparently quite good at. They have these hired hands, so there are no fingerprints from the Kremlin or Moscow. But a danger, do you think? Or is it kind of the same thing as a nuke? Like, you don't want to do that because we could do it to you.
Well, frankly, I think we have been using cyber warfare against the Russians inside of Ukraine and around Ukraine. And we're not getting any advertising on that because that's, it's wartime. And loose lips sink ships, as they used to say during World War II. So I don't think we're going to hear about that. The Russians, for all their vaunted capabilities, haven't been really conducting cyber attacks, not because they're trying to hold back, but because I don't think they really have. They got a bigger reputation than they really are capable of executing. And so the cyber attacks that they can conduct are meaningless in the beginning of the war, and now they're just blowing places up. I mean, they're so indiscriminate, so undisciplined, and so grotesquely war criminals for killing civilians in civilian buildings. Cyber warfare is not even something that will gain them anything anyway. But I am convinced that we are conducting cyber attacks against Russia at this point.
Interesting. A veteran of the U.S. State Department for 25 years. Currently, he's a professor of national security at the Henry C. Lee College of Criminal Justice at the University of New Haven. Dr. Howard Stouffer. Dr. Stouffer, good to hear from you again. Thank you. This is fascinating, and hopefully we'll chat down the road. Thanks.
I look forward to it. Thank you so much, Paul.
Appreciate it, Dr. Howard Stouffer there. Well, how about that, folks? Somebody who's been there, done that with the State Department. So interesting, especially what he said about cyber attacks. And he's right. You haven't really heard a lot about that, right? And look, like we said before, you just know. You don't have to be a genius as a commoner who's not involved in this to understand that a lot of this stuff is, don't say anything.